Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report. Today is a Wednesday, which makes it Big News Wednesday, and I forgot to ask if we had the intro ready. Do we? No? What I love about that is I go to ask, and Sophie's like, oh, I don't think so. And Brandon, the director's like, yeah, no, of course I've got it. Boom, instantly. See, I should have just had faith. Anyway, I should have had faith. What I do have is J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going? Welcome to Big News Wednesdays at TDR.
John, you can call me Faith, you can call me J.R., it's all good. As long as we got the intro ready to go. You know what, Brandon's just on top of things. He understands the day, he understands the importance, and therefore he's prepared to go. Let's keep it real.
It's such a Big News Wednesday that we're just gonna do that randomly every 15 or so seconds. But no, with all due respect, I'm gonna stick to calling you JR. There's only one Faith, and she was on Buffy, okay? No one gets to be that. Anyway.
Jesus, John, I thought you were gonna say Evans, and you're about to get mad cool points, and you effed it up.
I actually got negative, but sure, Faith Evans too. Anyway, thank you, buddy, for being here. I know, you're worried that today is gonna be a repeat of yesterday, but I swear we've got our guest. Everyone's on their game. And more importantly than all that, we've got a lot of news. And even more important than that, we've got some catching up to do because we meant to do a poll yesterday. Remember we were talking about Tucker Carlson and his absolutely insane, deranged, creepy rant about Kamala Harris? Well, we wanted to ask you sort of substantively, based on what you're seeing right now, do you think that she will be, in the end, the nominee in 2024? So if you go to tyt.com/polls, we do have that up. Maybe we can get the answer to that to close out the show. I obviously have my predictions. I would say no, but I'm fairly certain that multiple times before 2020, I said there's absolutely no chance Biden will be the nominee. So what do I know? So well, anyway, let's see what you think.
I guess it depends on who's gonna potentially be the other. You know, who else running? We'll see. Sorry, you're gonna.
I don't have like a preference or anything. There's nobody I really want to be the nominee. Oh, that's gonna be a great day when she or he finally announces. But anyway, we'll have those results for you later on. Also, we might maybe have a Rittenhouse verdict. I don't know. Like it could have happened yesterday, maybe it'll happen today. So if it happens, we will find out, ironically, probably from you, and then we'll talk about it and give you our opinions. But with all that said, we got so much to talk about because it is a big old packed. Big News Wednesday. So please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And JR, with that, are you ready to talk about some stuff?
Ready.
And this story has no relation to what I was cryptically saying about my preference for 2024. So let's jump into this.
Why go after him?
Yes.
Because he made threats, suggestions about harming a member of Congress. That is an insult, not only an endangerment of that member of Congress, but an insult to the institution of the House of Representatives. We cannot have members joking about murdering each other, as well as threatening the President of the United States.
So that was Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about the fact that later on today, the House will be voting to censure Republican Representative Paul Gosar. And also stripping him of his seats on the House Oversight and Natural Resources Committee, as Nancy Pelosi made fairly clear there. It is because of the video that he tweeted out and then defended in multiple different condescending ways, where he, and let's not forget this, I really don't get why nobody acknowledges this, he and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene are depicted slicing the back of the neck of a naked AOC. And so some people have a problem with depicting yourself murdering your coworker. And so we will see what ends up happening with the censure vote. We'll have a little bit more on that. But JR, what do you think about this? Are you surprised that they're gonna do it? And do you think that it might work?
I would have been, only because they, you know, they did it early with, as you said, Marjorie Greene earlier, because of her racist comments, outrageous things that she's been saying on in public and about her place in Congress. So I normally would have been, but at least in this case, I was like, they mentioned they're gonna do it. And when it comes to the outdoor, outside the bounds fringe of the Republican Party that still Kevin McCarthy will continue to defend, there is at least a level of courage from Democrats in the House to at least come after these folks, the Boberts, the Gateses, the Marjorie Greens, and now the Gosars of the world. So yeah, it makes sense. This wasn't too far out of my realm of reality.
Okay, interesting. I'm a little bit surprised. I couldn't conceive of a world in which we talked about anything for 2 weeks consecutively, no matter how concerning they are. Before I move on, by the way, people are saying, because I made a cryptic reference before this video about it having something to do with 2024. People are like, does he want Nancy Pelosi to run? No. So anyway, let's get into a little bit about the resolution. It's scheduled for action later on today. They're gonna refer to the Republicans' inaction and draw a connection between Mr. Gosar's video and the Capitol riot, stating that, quote, depictions of violence can foment actual violence and jeopardize the safety of elected officials as witnessed in this chamber on January the 6th, 2021. They go on to say violence against women in politics is a global phenomenon meant to silence women and discourage them from seeking positions of authority and participating in public life, with women of color disproportionately impacted. I like that they're acknowledging that in this. I think, look, if we were to go back over the last few years of the incessant attacks against mainly members of the squad. So AOC, like, they talk constantly about her, but also people like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have been targeted quite a bit as well, Cori Bush too. And all too often, nobody other than their close supporters have stood up for them, including Democratic leadership. We can debate, would they have done this if Biden hadn't been in the video? I'm not sure, but good. If you do a good thing, I will say good, thank you, and I will not forget the times when you did not do what you should have done.
I was thinking the same thing, whether or not, because Biden was in it, then it became this bigger thing that allowed the rest of the House to come around and coalesce around this. But this is the thing, they point out there in that one statement that it also disproportionately, like, it ends up affecting women of color more. They know things like this. So as women of color, especially the newer members of Congress that tend to be more progressive, are in, and then these things kind of things happen, the threats and the approaches that happen to the way that they're happening, many times things aren't done, which tells us they know how it works from this statement here. They know that it's dangerous, but they don't always do something about it. So why not? We wonder if they know what they're not doing, but they do. They know what they're not doing when they're not doing it. So the reasons they do it in this particular instance means something else pushed them over this edge. And I guess it's us for us to speculate now.
Exactly. Well, I wanna give you updated responses for what's been happening in this process from both Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Paul Gosar. AOC said it's been well over a week. He not only has not apologized, he not only has not made any sort of contact or outreach, neither he nor the Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, but he's also doubled down by saying that I am somehow, you know, representative of undocumented people. And again, if we're compiling a list of things to not forget about this that don't get talked about enough, yes, he was targeting AOC. That's the main thing. Yes, he included Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene also being the person who kills AOC. Oddly enough, they chose to use an anime where the woman AOC would be is naked for some reason. But also, they depicted hordes of immigrants coming towards the US in an anime context where those things need to be killed. So it is not just violence against a woman of color, a representative of the United States, but also implying the need for violence against virtually limitless potential immigrants who might try to cross over into the United States. Now, on the vote, she says, in a perfect world, he'd be expelled. We are not in a perfect world, so censure and removal from committee, I believe, is appropriate. She also said that Gosar and other Republicans are essentially using a national platform to legitimize threats of violence on lower levels, and on the local levels to intimidate people from participating in our democracy. I believe this is part of a concerted strategy. It 100% is. It always comes back to the threats. It's Madison Cawthorn's threats. It's, you know, saying we might need to do it again in DC. It's Mike Flynn getting given a gun and saying, maybe I should go to Washington with this. It's the people threatening school boards. It's just constant. And the issue isn't just that Paul Gosar did it, knowing exactly why he was doing, what message he was sending. He goes more than a week now without ever even talking to her, explaining anything. Well, then he is telling you, no, I like the message that came out of this. People think I was threatening her life. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not even gonna give her the minimal respect necessary to sit down with her. And like, obviously you would apologize. He's not gonna do that, clearly, but he won't even talk to her. Further, by the way, crystallizing that this is a guy who not only is so disgusting and free of substance that he thinks that American politics should be reduced to just constant threats of political violence, but he doesn't have the courage to even look AOC in the eye as he's doing it.
Well, that's the way that was supposed to work. And by the way, as far as apologizing, Jesus, apologies is something that would take away all of the effect that you had then on your foot soldiers. Now, if you understand that your audience, your crowd, your supporters tend to lean towards violence for some reason that you just can't figure out, if you actually cared about the result not happening, what did they say? Oh, I was just joking. They'll say a lot. That's really not gonna happen. These people are hyperventilating over nothing. Things have happened. We've seen them happen in multiple instances. It's not like it's just January 6th where these kinds of MAGA supporters have been out and been violent. They've been that way since this guy started running. So when you've been the next level of MAGA, which is what the guys like Gosar is here, you've taken on that same group. So you can't act like this group isn't violent just because you say so. We've seen it for our own eyes. So you can't try and gaslight the rest of the country and say, I don't know why they're talking about violence. It's just a cartoon. We got people believing that the pizza shop was running a pedophile ring. So don't tell me that this is way too far away from the normal realms of imagination to see happening, because it's reality. It has happened.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that there are still people waiting in Dallas for JFK Jr. They were there a couple days ago. They know who their base is. They know who's out there. And sure, we know that the vast, vast majority of people who even like videos like the AOC thing will never actually act on it. Many of them, if it came to it, would be a passive, you know, like they just accept a fascist takeover of the United States, but they're not necessarily gonna do it themselves. But how many does he have that like it? Are we hoping that it's 1 in 1,000 who would actually commit a violent act? 1 in 10,000? You don't think there's 10,000 people that like Paul Gosar and like that video? And so what has Gosar actually said? Well, we don't know much because the meeting they had about it was a private meeting. He apparently told his House Republican colleagues that he would never espouse violence or harm to anyone. It's too late for that. You already did that. He noted that he took the video down from his account. Although we should bear in mind that he only did that after leaving it up for multiple days so that many people could see it and spread it. Then mocking people who expressed bewilderment that you would depict yourself murdering a coworker by putting up this meme. Because remember, he's a cool kid who understands meme culture. By the way, do you know why they use that format? I want you to look at the face on the right. And then I want you to take a look at Paul Gosar's face. Yeah, I would replace myself with the guy with the beard too, if I had the option. Anyway, hey, there it is. Doesn't look quite as tough. Not quite as tough. Weird how they never match up to their fascist imagery. It's always more pathetic and bloodshot in reality. Yes, Steve Bannon, Captain America in the flesh. They're very tough people. Anyway, he goes on to say it's a symbolic cartoon. It's not real life. He says that he and his office were trying to reach out to the younger generation that likes these anime. First of all, they will spend like every other minute that they're not co-opting the anime, attacking every other culture in the world. So let's not pretend that they get it necessarily. But and he told, by the way, conservative host Stu Peters, who's a person, that he did not apologize for posting the video. Well, there was no ambiguity about that. Take it from Stu Peters. As people do, I don't know. Anyway, JR, what do you think?
Apologies and understanding the position that you've put yourself in, let's keep it real, to them is an act of surrender. Because the point is to continue to push and push and push. There's no end, there's no floor to the horrible things that you'll push for people to do. And if you take it back, or if you just say, oh man, I overshot what I was trying to do here, you've limited your power. Their power is based in their supporters being as rabid and potentially violent and murderous as possible. That's where their strength comes from. And you diffuse that if you say, yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. We'll see if they end up voting. I'm assuming that if it is successful, and I find it hard to believe because, you know, like everything, that the Republicans will complain about. How could you ever strip someone of their committee assignments? So bear in mind, in like the last year, there have been two instances in which the Republicans have talked about potentially stripping their members of their committee assignments. It was for voting to convict Donald Trump in his second impeachment trial after he literally sent people to attack the Capitol. And then supporting the bipartisan infrastructure bill. So, I mean, but that's serious stuff. Oh, threatening to murder a colleague, that's just fun games. This is serious stuff. You voted for a bipartisan infrastructure bill. You should clearly be destroyed as a result.
The world is upside down, man. It's upside down. And that's accepted political positioning now. That's an accepted stance to take as an elected official. Can't believe you did that. You voted.
Can I say one more thing about the imagery thing? Because they all imagine themselves to be these like perfect, like Nazi propaganda Aryan lumberjacks or whatever. And then you look at all of them. And, but I saw someone was spreading, they had taken Kyle Rittenhouse's face and they'd put it on Captain America. So he's Captain America, Kyle Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that they're not actually as good with pop culture as they think they are. But we literally just had a show about Captain America. One of the major subplots was a guy who wanted to live up to the ideals of Captain America, but instead, in a rage, killed people. I feel like you could have gone in that direction at least. That's at least appropriate to the Kyle Rittenhouse example. But no, still Captain America, still totally untouchable and pure.
Isn't there a Captain America a comic moment where he's punching the hell out of Hitler in the face? Or is that the Superman?
Nazi, yes.
Is it Superman or is it Captain America?
It's probably,
I can't remember. Either way it goes, it's one of them, and that's the point. But Kyle Rittenhouse, who's Captain America here, he's not punching Nazis, but he's in bars posing with Nazis. Like, it's a direct difference. But somehow you can't see reality. Instead, you see this cartoon that you've created of this kid. That's what we're
doing. No, you didn't get it. Captain America punched him and then like immediately after he was like, sorry, Hitler, that was just for the photos, but like, let's go get a beer now and some brats. That's probably what happened. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take our first break. We come back, more revelations coming out of January 6th than what was going on around then. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, with that.
Hey.
Crazy story.
I'm gonna get a t-shirt made. Pelosi Iderola 24.
Oh my god, I saw someone like had screen capped Hassan on a stream was wearing like, it was like Cuomo Fauci 24, and they were like, oh yeah, he's a lefty, right? He's not being serious. What's wrong with people? God, the only faith was on Buffy, and the only faith remaining is bad faith. Okay, everybody is in bad faith.
Evans, John. Evans, not Buffy.
Also, Evans. But anyway, with that, let's talk about some crazy news. We are finding out even more about what was going on around January 6th, the run up to the inauguration, from the book Betrayal, the final act of the Trump show by ABC News, Jonathan Karl. He's got more that we need to discuss that he should have discussed back when it was happening, but he held it. So this is when we're going to talk about it. So he says that Mike Flynn and Sidney Powell, reached out to Ezra Cohen, a senior intelligence official, in the days following the election to urge him to help the Trump administration stop Democrats from, quote, stealing the election. Okay, well, so far, so normalized crazy. They didn't want the election to be stolen or whatever. But it gets way crazier. Flynn called Cohen while the intelligence official was overseas in the Middle East and told him to return to the US, saying an epic showdown over the election results was imminent. Okay, so far, just moderately more crazy. Cohen received another call shortly after from Powell, who told him that then CIA director Gina Haspel was detained in Germany trying to destroy a computer server the attorney claimed contained evidence that would prove the 2020 election was stolen. Powell urged Cohen to have the Defense Department send a special operations team in and quote, get the server and force Haspel to confess. Okay, so Gina Haspel, who was the CIA director, decided to send herself on a covert mission to destroy a server and got injured in that effort and was being detained. So she wanted the Department of Defense to send special operatives to get her and make her admit that she was going to destroy this server that proves the election was stolen, that was for some reason in Germany. Look, honestly, I've been trying to come up with cool plot lines for spy novels, and this is better than anything I have yet. So totally. Kudos to Sidney Powell.
I was just thinking that they've watched way too many 90s. I was going to say 80s, 90s action films. I think that's the problem, because there's way too much of the bad guy walks around with a cut off shirt on and he's got cuffs on his wrist with spikes on them. And if you electrocute him enough times, he wakes up and gets stronger. That's Joe Biden. This is the world that we're living in now, right? Remember those movies? Those are the bad guy gets stronger when you shoot him. You shoot him four times and he gets stronger.
That's true. It's like when you knock out Hulk Hogan. It's like that just energizes him more. Anyway,
it's crazy. She went overseas, got busted. We have an epic showdown. Is that how you talk when you talk about national security former advisors, and then people high in the intelligence committee are supposed to race back because we have an epic showdown that I'm creating in my brain?
Yeah, I don't know. I just wish they'd had Jean-Claude Van Damme on hand to send, but apparently they didn't. So Powell claimed that this server that, again, the CIA director went to destroy, she didn't like send agents or soldiers or, you know, one of the other foot soldiers, the deep state, she went herself. The server had proof that hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of votes had been deliberately miscounted to deliver a win to President Joe Biden. This is, you'll be shocked to find out, an unfounded theory that was gaining traction in QAnon conspiracy theories. But this is how awesome our government was. It was like a 3-minute gap between some weirdo on 4chan coming up with something and putting a Q below it. And then a lawyer has the phone number of a senior intelligence official to spread the conspiracy theory to. Why does Sidney Powell have any of these numbers? But she does, because she was working for Donald Trump. Anyway, Cohen thought Powell sounded out of her mind. I don't know why. He thought she was crazy, I guess. And he quickly reported the call to the acting defense secretary. In a statement to Reuters back in December 2020, CIA spokesperson Nicole DeHaye said the theory was, quote, the most absurd inquiry I've ever addressed. I'm happy to tell you that Director Haspel is alive and well and at the office. She's not descending into a volcano lair that has like the Dominion servers. Powell did not immediately respond to insiders' requests for comment for some reason. I don't know.
I can't figure it out. There's probably a lot to say. This is why you can't, this is a bit of a side conversation, but this is why you can't participate or conduct debates with people who are deep in this type of thought. What are you going to talk about? What are we going to discuss? What are we going to debate the merits of? Whether or not Gina Haspel was in some hole bunker somewhere off in Germany holding the last Dominion machine, because it's the last bit of evidence that she's gotten with her life. She's gritting it so hard that her fingers are bleeding. Is this what really, so I'm supposed to tell you that that's close to cussing. I'm supposed to tell you that that's BS. That's what I'm supposed to, waste my time to talk to you about whether or not that makes sense or not. Or am I just supposed to say, hey, go back and watch your cartoons and let adults go and handle some adult business over here? Which one am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to waste my time?
If you think that they might be back in power. I love the idea though. I love like Gina Haspel, like she's in the volcano lair, she's got the server. The agents of Mike Lindell are closing in. They all have pillowcases over their head. And she's like, I need a path out. So she grabs the server, puts a gun to it. She's like, nobody make a move. I will not stop the steal or something. Here's the thing. This is fun, I guess, but this is a story about Sidney Powell and Mike Flynn. And the Sidney Powell part is more obviously crazy, it's not actually the most potentially dangerous part of this. So let's turn now to Flynn. So Flynn, according to, again, this is coming from Jonathan Carl, urged Cohen that, quote, he needed to get orders signed, that ballots needed to be seized, and that extraordinary measures needed to be taken to stop Democrats from stealing the election. As Flynn ranted about the election fight, Cohen felt his old boss sounded manic. He didn't sound like the same guy he'd worked for. So let's be clear, he was talking with a senior intelligence official saying they needed to take control of the ballots, which sounds oddly like what the Germans had been doing, since they're the ones trying to hide all this. They need to sign things. They need to take extraordinary measures to stop the Democrats from taking over. Now, Cohen supposedly fought back. He said, sir, the election is over. It's time to move on. Flynn filed back, you're a quitter. This is not over. Don't be a quitter. Which is like exactly what the villain says right before the building explodes. So look, Sidney Powell is even crazier. But again, she was working for Trump. Flynn got pardoned by Trump like less than a month before then. Like, they were still very closely tied together. He wanted him back in government. He's pressuring senior government officials to effectively help them steal the election. And so this makes me feel that the stuff we found out about the acting defense secretary yesterday that we were talking about him trying to stop them from deploying the military that were up to the election, like there was this like full court press on anyone in a position of authority, and especially who was in charge of guns, to stop Joe Biden from becoming president.
If you think that these are all too outlandish stories to understand and believe, maybe you may think that because Jonathan Carl, as you mentioned from the top of this, didn't say it then, but then wrote in a book, fine, I get that. But if nothing else, the proof is behind the way Donald Trump continues to act to this second. Is he still talking about it? Is he still saying it's stolen? Is he still saying that he should be reinstated as president of the United States? Is Mike Lindell about to have his seventh special to uncover all the facts? Because they're doing the same thing. So you can write it off and say, hey, no, how could you believe any of this possibly happened? Could you believe that it's still happening now? Because it's happening right in front of you. And we're still having to discuss whether or not it's real or not with people who are supporting and believing and giving this guy money to continue to push these lies. So you don't have to believe the past. How about believe the present? Because then after this becomes the past, you're gonna go, yeah, I remember you guys back in November were talking about how Donald Trump is still sitting back and making up stories. It's happening. Believe it now.
Yep. You're 100% right. It is still. There are Congress people this morning going on shows saying the election was definitely stolen. And again, I know everything's been normalized. Everything's been normalized. That's not how it used to work, that a year after an election, they would just be claiming as a fact that the election was stolen. And then, by the way, using it as justification to call for potential civil war. So we'll have that video for you tomorrow. So definitely stay tuned. But I want to get to one other revelation coming from this. You know what? Let's jump directly into this next video.
There was a sense from most of the staffers that this was at the very least a political disaster. There was one big exception, though. Kayleigh McEnany was the, as you know, the press secretary, and Trump was having a meeting with his political team in the Oval Office and was being presented with numbers. This is in the spring, showing that his reelection chances were looking grim, primarily because of what was happening with COVID. And he said, no, bring in Kayleigh. And Kayleigh comes in and she said, Kayleigh, tell him what you were just telling me. And Kayleigh McEnany tells the president of the United States, I think you're going to win, sir, and I think you're going to win because of COVID. And then she explained that the biggest weakness that they had in the midterms was healthcare. And now with COVID dominating the news, the Democrats wouldn't be able to talk so much about healthcare. Healthcare would be less of an issue. So, I mean, you have to get your head around this, but she was saying, she was saying that because of the greatest public health crisis of our time, of the last century, they wouldn't have to talk so much about healthcare, and therefore he was going to win.
To be fair, Kayleigh McEnany was not hired to be political advisor necessarily, so maybe her advice doesn't have to be that good. But that is what she told Trump. And look, does that reflect poorly on Kayleigh McEnany? Obviously, yes. But She was called into the room by Trump to say it again. He'd already heard that nonsense. He was like, I would like a second helping of that, please. Yes, I think it makes sense. With a pandemic ravaging the country, people won't be thinking about healthcare. You know what? Next time, I can only hope that dinosaurs are released across America so people will stop thinking about being consumed by massive lizards. I need this sort of distraction. But they were convinced that that was true, JR.
Every time you hear stories like this, lizards are where my brain goes. These are the people that are considered the most powerful, most intelligent people that are steering our country in the right direction. These are the people that we've entrusted with generally our lives with, because they're supposed to be the smartest, the most, have the most foresight, think things through, surround themselves by individuals that are going to do the right thing. And this is what we get. Kayleigh McEnany, who got her job because she went on Fox News long enough and praised this guy. Yeah. That's how you get your job to influence what we call the most powerful man in the world.
Yep. No, and that's a great point, by the way, because that is what was happening. She just said Trump was right about everything on Fox after being against him, and he forgot about that. But then she would just go on Fox and say he's right, and that would make him feel better, so he hired her. So then what advice did he get from her? Oh no, don't worry, this thing that's wrecking your chances is actually the thing that's going to make you win. And that made him feel good. It didn't help him, but it made him feel good. And by the way, like, it's not even that there isn't something you could take out of her advice. The election was obviously going to be massively affected by the pandemic. It's possible that, look, saying it's gonna make people not think about healthcare is crazy, but it will make them not think about a lot of other things they might be thinking about. So then all you really need to do is ace the pandemic, but he didn't even take that away from it. He knew, he apparently accepted the election will hinge on the pandemic. So I'm gonna half-ass it the whole time. I'm not gonna do anything.
You know why?
And he's shocked that he lost.
Because taking care of the pandemic would be taking care of people, which is the last thing that any conservative ever has in their mind. The thought is, I need to spin this away to make myself look good despite what the pandemic is doing to people. Not, hey, the pandemic is doing all these things to people. Let me manage it in a way that lets them understand that I'm on their side and they should vote for me again. If nothing else, you can do it even just for a selfish reason. You can be like, I actually don't care that 500,000 people are dying. I don't care. What I care about is when I get reelected. So let me at least do something for those 500,000 people or the rest of the country that's watching 500,000 people die. And then they'll at least vote me back in and then I can go back to BSing around. He can't even bring himself to do that because that's the level of disgust and animosity that they hold towards American people that they claim that they're so patriotic towards.
The bare minimum. But I'm so glad that you mentioned that because there's a little bit more in this video that really demonstrates that. So Jonathan Carl is gonna talk about a story of a staffer who back during the initial months of the pandemic raised concerns about doing an indoor rally for the election, particularly because this staffer had a pre-existing condition. Well, you know how this ended. Trump decided to have the rally anyway, and here is what Jonathan Carl says.
Now that the rally was over, the president was back in Washington complaining bitterly that more people had not shown up. Well, his campaign worker was stuck in Tulsa, lying in a hospital bed, thinking his life was about to end. My first question is, how is this staffer? And my second is, what did his own inner circle feel about Donald Trump's indifference to the pandemic?
Well, the staffer eventually recovered and went back to Washington and remains a faithful supporter of Donald Trump. One other thing about that rally, in addition to the staffer that was left behind in a hospital, the others that tested positive but were not that sick, they tested positive, had COVID, they were told to get rental cars and to drive back to Washington. And one car, at least that I was informed about, had three COVID positive staffers in a rental car driving the 1,000 plus miles back. God knows stopping where, you know, gas refills, food. I mean, you know, you're supposed to quarantine. You're supposed to self-isolate to keep from spreading the disease to others.
Yeah, so they didn't care about this caravan of sickness they were going to send across the country. And the saddest part for me, JR, is that staffer is like enthusiastic supporter of Trump. The staffer was scared about what would happen. Exactly the worst thing happened. They went to the hospital, nearly died, and still Trump's the best. MAGA. I don't understand it.
I
don't understand it.
You know what? A lot of times when people follow these kinds of leaders that have nothing but, you know, death upon their result of their leadership, you think, man, at least they're charismatic. I can get it. Oh man, he really went for that con man because that con man started so nice and love bombed them, and then they feel good about themselves. Maybe he does that stuff personally with people. I don't know how you continue to go down that road of trusting someone who literally didn't care about your life.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even that good at it.
Yeah. No, he could at least be good. I don't get. I mean, I guess what else he is supposed to do? They know that Trump is the party for the next decade or so. I don't know. So sad. If I had a vision that like Bernie was gonna like try to strangle me to death, and then he comes to the studio, I meet him, and he goes for my throat, and then finally releases me, I wouldn't be like, can I contribute to your campaign? But some people don't have the self-preservation or the self-respect. Anyway, speaking of which, maybe let's move on to the C block. Our last story for this section. Chris Christie has got a hell of a PR team, I have to assume, because he's everywhere in the media recently. And for the most part, there's been very softball coverage as well as softball interviews. But sometimes it does get a little bit harder. So take a look at this.
You know, the book is called, it's about conspiracies and lies, and you really don't take on Fox News. Why not?
Look, because the book was,
because
the book, no, I don't watch it, but the book.
Are you aware of what he does?
Not really. I don't pay a lot of attention to it.
It's a book with truth deniers, conspiracy theorists on the cover.
Right.
And you attack CNN and the New York Times and MSNBC and not Fox.
But excuse me, I don't attack them as conspiracy theorists or truth deniers. I talk about bias.
And is bias more dangerous to the country than conspiracy theorists?
No, but that's the third section of the book.
I read it.
I talk about the movement forward. In the center portion of the book, we talk about the conspiracy theories and the truth denying that went on with things like QAnon, Pizzagate, the election situation, John Birch Society. And that's what I talk about. There's two sections of the book, and I'm sure accidentally you're conflating them.
I'm not conflating them, but I don't think you have. I don't think it's an intellectually honest case to make against conspiracy theories without taking on Fox News.
Well, I could listen, then you can write that in your book.
Well, I'm not trying to rescue the Republican Party.
I understand. Well,
that was pretty good. I mean, I think if you're gonna have him on, I get it. He has a book. And a booker emailed your show because he has a book. He's also Chris Christie. He doesn't hold public office. He hasn't for some time. He's been a pretty horrible guy from a political perspective. So why are you obligated to have him on? Well, if you're gonna have him on, at least point out what he's really trying to do and not just like the marketing copy on the inner flap of his book.
It's not so hard to do that. It's very easy to do that. Someone's trying to get their popularity out and talk about the things that they wrote and also potentially run for president in the next cycle. They have to be prepared to answer the questions. If they're not prepared to answer the questions, why are you trying to get yourself back into public life? Jonathan Carl's going on and doing all this stuff, and I'm annoyed that he wrote the book too. But he's going on at least talking about it. And if someone wants to challenge him, they can challenge him. But he at least has the information that he took and put in the book to say so. If you're going to go on, she said he attacked CNN, MSNBC, and all these entities. You're gonna go on MSNBC and expect not to get asked about it? That's what was so surprising to me, that he was surprised that someone had the nerve to ask him why he attacked them off of their stance. And you sure you can, if something's wrong, attack them. But if they wanna bring it up, at least expect them to talk about it and not be so, because it's my book. Yeah, your book sucks. If you wanna sell it, let's talk about what's in it then.
Yeah, 100%. And not just on critical, like, okay, so yeah, it's a conspiracy theories. I'm taking on QAnon. That's like the literal easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
But he knows he can maybe afford to do that and maybe be the Republican nominee. It's not gonna happen, but he's convinced himself of that. But what about all the more relatively mainstream right wing conspiracy theories that make up the vast majority of Fox News programming about great replacement and COVID conspiracies and all of that? Like, are you gonna take on that? The lies about what's being taught in our schools? No, he's chosen like a very narrow thing that can pitch him as the guy who's embracing the truth, but he's not actually challenging the core of the issues that are facing the Republican Party.
Yeah, Because he doesn't, and he knows it. He knows it. That's the thing. He knows it. Chris Christie's not a stupid guy. He's a smart person. He understands how these things work. And they try to tiptoe their way and weave their way through the landmines of the Republican Party to come up with some kind of a self-serving campaign pitch for themselves while they avoid all the horrible things they helped create.
Yeah, 100%. And I will just say he has been on a lot. Aaron Rupar said he was on interviewed by the New York Times, twice on ABC, Fox and Friends, a 1 hour long CNN special, a second interview by CNN. He was on The Daily Show, MSNBC three times, six times across CNN and MSNBC in like a day and a half, which is crazy. And I get it. I get it. He has a book, and that means you get to go on. Well, I have a book that's almost done. It's about a mouse. There's magic. There's swords. I expect my 1 hour special, CNN. Now, yes, my book doesn't really get to the heart of the problems with the Republican Party, but neither does his. And you gave him a special. Mine's at least got interesting characters. There's a crow. Take a look at it. Anyway, okay, Jay. Oh, by the way, also, Chris Christie was asked in a different interview, one of the many. He was like, well, Donald Trump could potentially be a part of the Republican Party going forward. He just has to stop with the claims about the stolen election. You little wussy. First of all, he's never gonna do that. Second of all, you're still saying you might support him after all this. You are not at all the thing you're trying to brand yourself as. Okay, with that, why don't we take our second break? We come back. Someone wants to stand with Kyle Rittenhouse and the Staples Center has a new name. We'll respond to both of those stories after this. Kyle Rittenhouse is desperately looking for allies, but maybe he should have some kind of standards because you know who rose to his defense? Nicholas Sandman. Do you remember Nicholas Sandman? Nicholas Sandman was the kid who was in that trip to the Capitol, and there was this standoff with these Native American activists and the big media blow up about it. And then the right declared victory that these kids were awesome and totally didn't do anything wrong in this. And I think that's incredibly debatable. But anyway, Nicholas Sandman has written an op-ed in the Daily Mail about Rittenhouse. And I want to read a little bit of this because I think it's quite revealing. It says, the parallels between me and Kyle Rittenhouse are impossible not to draw. But you don't have to. Why would you do that? He murdered people. Anyway, he says Kyle was 17 years old when he became a household name after that terrible tragedy in Kenosha.
Tragedy.
Which tragedy? What was the nature of the track? Oh, did he shoot multiple people? Did he go there with a gun and shoot multiple people? Maybe be more specific. And he talks about his thing, blah, 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 at the Lincoln Memorial. He says, Kyle was almost immediately labeled a white supremacist and a domestic terrorist. To many, my red MAGA hat clearly meant that I was a racist. No, that was totally unfair. You wear the MAGA hat because you're so open-minded on topics of race. That's why you identify with Donald Trump, of all people. Anyway, he says the attacks on Kyle came from the national news media just as they came for me. They came quickly without hesitation because Kyle was an easy target that they could paint in the way they wanted to. And I just want to say, I love some of the word choice in this op-ed. He was an easy target, okay? Not the people he shot. They were not targeted. He's being targeted. Let's see, he goes on to say, he's the target of character assassination. He says, from my own experience, I know that this cannot be easy for Kyle. While I have waited to comment on the facts of Kyle's case until the trial ends, I cannot hold back on the media's public execution of him before the trial has concluded. So he's being targeted, he's being assassinated, he's being executed, not the people that he shot, the multiple people he killed, the other people he shot. So look, Rittenhouse didn't necessarily ask for any of this. This is on Nicholas Sandman. But I will remind you of what I said when the Nicholas Sandman thing was going on. I have no idea what's in his heart or in his mind, but I know someone who loves the right-wing media attention they're getting, and he's gonna be looking for that for the rest of his life. I didn't make him stand up in support of a guy who killed a bunch of people and then use a bunch of terminology that implies that the shooter is the one who's being targeted. He decided to do that. So we're gonna keep up our watch of Nicholas Sandman. We had this big debate across the country. Was he unfairly maligned for what happened on that one day? Perhaps, but we're gonna be watching going forward and just wait until you see what he is going to say and do to continue being a darling of the right.
This is a limited plan about what to do with your clout, because people are always looking for clout these days, especially since you can broadcast yourself immediately and become this figure. So in this case, he wasn't planning it, but he became this guy because he knew he was at a situation and a conflict and decided to stick his face in there with a smug smile the whole time. And after that happened, if you don't like the attention, yeah, you can be forgotten about if you kind of slink back away into normalcy. But if you keep putting yourself as this figure and connecting yourself with this next very divisive figure here in Kyle Rittenhouse, don't complain when people start talking about you again. Oh, and the progressive media is coming after me again. Oh, and look, the woke culture is trying to get me. Look, now the media is trying to get me. CNN, MSNBC coming after me. Hey, nobody says your name until you put your name back out there. Alex Jones was like, oh, suddenly everybody's going to connect me with what happened to Sandy Hook. Bro, you did that. So
yes,
you can't get your clout and then not expect any of the pushback from people who are calling out how horrible of a person you are in getting your clout. So take your clout with your criticism. And if you can't, shut up.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. You're choosing to do this. And that's what he's choosing to do now. We will see next year when people aren't talking about him again. What is he going to say or do to get them to focus on him? And look, while I think it's ridiculous that you would want to associate yourself with Kyle Rittenhouse, we do have to remember that they live in an incredibly different world, a world where violence against people who disagree with you is like the best thing you can do. It's not unfortunate. They're not saying he defended himself. I really wish he hadn't been there. He shouldn't have had that gun that he wasn't legally allowed to have. He never should have gone there. But once he's there, he gets to defend himself. That is not what they're saying. They love every bit of it and they want more of it. So just bear that in mind. Okay, we are running rapidly out of time for this first hour. So let's turn to something very different. The Staples Center, you can see it right there, has been in LA. It's like a major landmark in LA for some time, right, JR?
Yeah.
Huge events being held there. I've even gone there to see esports events. Anyway, it's gonna get a new name very soon, by Christmas, in fact. It is going to be renamed the Crypto.com Arena. Yeah. And my producers were very happy to tell me about this morning because they knew how mad it would make me. Here is a view of the website that I went to. For some reason, Matt Damon is involved with the website. It's Fortune Favors the Brave. And you know it's a great investment and a very, it's an awesome replacement for money when you have to be brave to use it. Anyway, it's not the Staples Center anymore. It won't be soon, JR. It's gonna be the Crypto.com Arena. What do you think?
Oh, that sucks. My kid and I always talk about how these, you know, I told him about corporate sponsorships back when he was like 3 or 4 years old and why these things are named what they're named. And I guess the groups that we got naming them just are going to look worse and worse. There's supposed to be a flow with the name, especially when it comes to something that houses sports teams. The Los Angeles Lakers, it just kind of flows, right? And then sometimes it doesn't. If they're naming a team, you have to think of these things. I guess we don't care anymore. It's okay. $700 million will get you a name, a bad name on an arena that we got to say every time now. It just doesn't sound iconic anymore, but we're going to get used to it and this will sound normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. You know what? And actually, to that mission, I want to remind you of some of the other names. And after all, the Staples Center is a branding thing.
Yeah.
Staples are also an object, so it doesn't bother me quite as much. But let's go to some of the other worst arena names out there. There's the jobbing.com arena.
Yeah.
Which that's just uncomfortable. I choose to think of it in wrestling terms, but even so. There's the Enron Field. It has been, it's been renamed. Thank you. I got that. Thank you. But at one point it was the Enron Field. You have this one, the Cheaper Insurance Direct Stadium. That's just no. Like if you name yourself that, I get it, but no. There's the Sleep Train Arena, because when you think of sports, you want to think of sleeping. But my favorite one, I actually really like this, the KFC Yum Center. I kind of would want to go watch an event at the KFC Yum Center.
They better have good food in that arena. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, they better. They have great chicken.
I mean, if we're branding, you got a brand and you have to deliver after you've branded people to come in and see what you've got.
Yeah, you do. Anyway, congrats to crypto.com and I will never ever call it that again. It's the Staples Center. Sorry, you didn't pay me $700 million. Anyway, thank you everybody for watching this first hour. If you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube or you know, maybe you're on the members app, we got more news coming. We're gonna talk about cilantro and I don't know, a whole bunch of other stuff like you'd probably expect. So we're gonna take a couple minute break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be back before you know it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.